Are you a homeschool parent looking for help teaching certain subjects? Or do you want your student to study the history, languages, and literature of Western civilization? Memoria Press Online Academy has live online classes with master teachers to help you. Their teachers have years of experience teaching, delighting, and moving students literally from all around the world. Your homeschool year doesn't have to be difficult. Visit MemoriaPressAcademy.com or call 877-745-8866.
Do you believe there's a heaven or a hell?
¿Cree usted que hay paraíso o infierno?
No.
No.
Desgraciadamente.
Unfortunately. Because it would be a great encouragement to fight for heaven.
Y admiro mucho lo que están
and I admire very much of those who fought so much for that.
No concibo que el cielo pueda
you know,
ser inventado.
I do not conceive that hell can be invented
por una razón filosófica.
For one philosophical reason.
No concibo que un Dios
I do not conceive that a God
capaz
could be capable
de crear
of creating
algo como el infierno.
Something like hell.
La Comisión de Derechos Humanos
I think that the Commission of Human Rights would never agree with the conception of hell and the existence of hell.
That's Fidel Castro back in 1993 speaking with Diane Sawyer of ABC News through a translator about heaven and hell. Of course, the dictator of Cuba for, well, my entire lifetime, I should say, or most of it. Died over the holiday weekend. We're going to be talking about religious liberty in Cuba. It is either a paradise, a workers' paradise, or it is a communist prison island. Which is it? We're hearing from leaders all over the world, but especially here in the United States, both of those things. What was liberty like in Cuba? Was there religious liberty? What's the future of that basic human right in that island country? Nathan Weininger will join us here in the first few minutes of Issues Etc. Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Monday afternoon. A little bit later, Dr. Alvin Schmidt will join us. We're going to be talking about a recent PBS Religion and Ethics News weekly feature on an Islamic ritual of washing before prayer. Then we're going to get a little post-election analysis talking about the presidential transition, presidential appointments, call for vote recounts. Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard will be our guest in the last 15 minutes of the program. Feel free to join us with questions or comments. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Nathan Weininger joins us to talk about religious liberty in Cuba. He's director of policy relations for the Wilberforce Initiative based in Falls Church, Virginia. Nathan, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you so much for having me.
What do you make of those who are, now that Castro has died, characterizing not only him, but also the nation that he ruled so long as either a workers' paradise, of him as a great champion of human rights and an enemy of imperialism? What do you make of that?
Well, he certainly wasn't a champion of human rights when it comes to rights of critique of his administration. And that could come from any particular corner, and that was certainly true for the church and religious bodies in Cuba. And it remains true today that being outside of the authority structures of the Communist Party that Fidel Castro set up is a threat to that party. And the party works to maintain control and stop people from acting in any way that jeopardizes its ability to pursue its interests. So it is a human rights violator for sure.
Is there anything that, by kind of American standards, which sadly of late have also had the bar lowered on them, but is there anything of kind of classical religious liberty that exists in Cuba in the wake of Fidel Castro's reign?
Well, I think it is important to know that the Constitution of Cuba does specify in Article 55 that the state respects and guarantees and recognizes religious freedom. That is a part of the Cuban Constitution. It's been incorporated for some time. However, that is subsumed by Article 62, which says that the aims of the socialist state and at the nation's determination to build socialism and communism can supersede those other rights. And so as a regime where you have the ability to control what's going on and the need to do so in a very tight manner, you can imagine that the Article 62 oftentimes came up against religious freedom, and religious freedom was the loser.
What happened to religious freedom in Cuba after Castro took over in the revolution?
Well, the revolution was targeted at anyone that had any sense of truth or identity that comes from outside of the state's control. And so that included all sorts of democracy and human rights activists, but it also included religious people and people who expressed religion. Even to this day, people remain in prison who are prisoners of conscience along religious lines. There continue to be activities from the government that try and control and stifle free expression, things that require registration of churches, that require registration of particular activities. Those things are ongoing in Cuba to this day.
Do we know anything about Castro's own view of religion?
You know, you played at the top a view that he talked about heaven or hell. I try not to, as a policy practitioner and advocate, make any particular windows into men's souls on those issues. I think we have to take him at his word and see particularly where his focus was, which was on propagating his own regime and its power and authority, not on supporting the fundamental human rights for those humans that he claimed he was interested in supporting.
If under a Castro regime, there was essentially no real right to critique that regime or Castro or its activities, seems as though there's a blurry line there between freedom of speech and freedom of religion. People of conscience may, in fact, church leaders, priests, things like that, may, in fact, feel the need to criticize the regime. I take it that that free exercise of religion just simply didn't exist in any real sense or was severely punished under Castro.
That exactly. You know, freedom of religion is what we like to call at the 21st Century Wilberforce Initiative our first freedom. Freedom of conscience issues, freedom of association issues, all sorts of freedoms, the right to express yourself through freedom of speech. All of these things are deeply connected to religious freedom. And oftentimes what happens in Cuba, even today, is that people who and organizations and churches and leaders, religious leaders, pastors, etc., who begin to speak out are the ones who get targeted for the state's oppression and the mechanisms that they use to do that.
We know that in communist China, Nathan, there are churches. Certainly churches exist, but they exist under the sanction of the state. Is there a similar situation in Castro's Cuba?
It is very similar. There are sort of two tiers of churches that exist in Castro's Cuba. And I would like to add that Castro's Cuba, because of the party that he created, because of the regime he created, because of the laws that he helped instigate, is still Castro's Cuba today. Fidel might have passed away, but Raul Castro, his brother, continues to maintain those structures. And according to the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom, in 2015, those restrictions got worse. What you allude to regarding this sort of state-sanctioned thing is exactly correct. The Office of Religious Affairs, which is actually a part of the Communist Party itself, requires registration of all religious communities. Currently, there are 54. Once they're registered, they have to turn over lists of their members. They have to make sure that the government is apprised of their activities. Anything that happens outside of normal worship on a normally scheduled worship time must be approved by the Office of Religious Affairs leaders. Now, you can just imagine if someone in a local church listening to this program was trying to sponsor a potluck at their church or a Harvest Fun Festival or something like that, and they had to go to an official who might be corrupt to seek approval, and then that same official has access to the full list of people who go to that church. That creates all sorts of challenges for freedom of expression of religion and for the church's role in calling out injustices against its people when the church sees those things happening, which the Cuban regime was clearly partaking in.
What do we know about religious leaders who may have been punished during the Castro regime, and what kind of punishments did they either face or potentially face?
Well, typically what happens if you speak out and you're specifically targeted, there are a series of intimidation tactics that start to take place. There might be mobs that come and protest outside of your regime or out of your church building. Those mobs are sponsored primarily by the regime, encouraged by the regime. We also see people who've been arrested for just the most silly little things. I mean, you know, we can talk about the history, but specifically what's going on now, which is, I think, deeply reflective of what's happened on in the past, is, you know, just last month, a pastor named Juan Carlos Nunez was arrested. His crime was having a worship service that was too loud, so there was a noise violation. Now, you would think that that would be something that a local official, if that really is an issue, could come by and ask things to quiet down. But rather than that happening, he was arrested. He was given no chance of an ability to actually defend himself in court. He was quickly sentenced, and to this day, we do not know any further information on his case. That was just last month, and so you can see how the government can use particular rules and laws as tools of oppression when someone, they're concerned that someone is starting to act out or become a risk for any particular reason.
I mean, it does sound, I mean, to those who may not have been paying attention or unaware that there's a communist neighbor 100 miles off the shore of the United States might say, that sounds like something out of the Cold War. That sounds like something out of Soviet Russia from the 20th century. What are your thoughts there?
I think in some ways it is very much like that. I think also it's important to remember, according to the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, there have been some improvements in some ways. A couple of church denominations, including the Catholic Church, the Episcopal Church, and the Presbyterian Reformed Church, have reported decreased influence from the state. However, those are registered churches where the state has lots of access to information anyway, and so isn't necessarily as uncertain about what's going on. Again, those unregistered churches are a huge issue. You mentioned earlier the local houses of worship or house churches. You know, in 2005, there was a Directive 43 and Resolution 46 that came out that indicated that those would then be illegal. Now, that was just sort of a threat because that wasn't really put into practice or enforced until 2015. But now, just one denomination, the Assemblies of God, has reported that 2,000 of its house churches have been threatened with closure or demolition or expropriation. So you can imagine some of these people don't have a lot of resources, and they've been tithing and they've been giving to their local congregation, and suddenly the building that they're in is no longer available. Those resources just disappear, and the social ministries that those churches provided are no longer accessible to the neighborhoods that they're a part of.
As to the future, you mentioned before that Fidel Castro's brother continues to maintain the levers of power there in Cuba. What would need to change fundamentally for genuine religious liberty to be restored to Cuba?
Well, first of all, the requirement that churches register need to be dropped, and they need to be dropped quickly. There's no legitimate law enforcement requirement for that. It is simply a means of an attempt from the state to control its populations that participates in religious activities. Again, another thing is that there have been democracy activists, people have been put in prison who are religious people, and then they're denied their ability to worship. When the Pope visited recently, over 150 human rights activists were actually denied, Catholic human rights activists were denied the ability to participate in a mass with Pope Francis, which as a Catholic, I am not myself one, but if you are a Catholic, that would be a very important part of your religious expression, and it's been denied. The Cuban regime needs to stop activities like that. That's what needs to happen on the ground. But, of course, what needs to happen here in the U.S. as we continue to have an evolving relationship with Cuba under President Obama, and then an uncertain relationship with Cuba going forward under President-elect Trump, we need to continue to and actually strengthen our conversations with various players in the region who have influence over Cuba, as well as particular officials in Cuba, if we maintain our diplomatic relations, about the importance of human rights, how they're deeply connected to Cuba's prosperity, how they're important for her people to be able to flourish.
Your organization, the Wilberforce Initiative, is concerned deeply about religious liberty. What have you generally observed about the relationship between communist regimes, socialist regimes, and religious liberty. How does religious liberty fare under those systems?
Any regime that thinks that it is the sole source of power and control is going to be afraid of people of faith. Communist and socialist regimes, communists in particular, which were primarily atheistic, are huge problems for that because they have, under Marx, defined that religion is the opiate of the masses. In fact, religion is a huge help for societies. It provides massive amounts of assistance to people in need. It provides a social conscience for individuals that it's extremely important. The Christian faith calls people to forgiveness and repentance in a way that helps heal social fissures. In the U.S. alone, $1.2 trillion of annual economic activity can be traced to various sort of religiously sourced activities, institutions, charities, healthcare, higher education, congregations, faith-inspired businesses, etc. And those types of things are being denied the people of Cuba. Those types of activities that support local thriving economies are being denied the people of Cuba. Those things that provide opportunities for new people who don't know each other yet to get together and to learn to break bread together, to learn to understand one another, those mechanisms are being halted by a regime that's fixated on its own power and its own continuity rather than on the best interests of the people of Cuba.
Nathan Weininger is Director of Policy Relations for the Wilberforce Initiative based in Falls Church, Virginia. You'll find a link to the Wilberforce Initiative at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Nathan, thank you very much for your time and keep up the good work.
It's been great to be with you. Thank you so much.
On the other side of the break, a recent PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly feature talked about an Islamic ritual of washing before prayer. It's rather extensive. We're going to be talking about why that's important in the piety of Islam. Dr. Alvin Schmidt will join us, Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College and author of the book, The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc. You'll find children's Christmas books, Reformation 500 gifts, devotional resources, and more in Concordia Publishing House's Christmas catalog. They'll send it to you for free. Call 1-800-325-3040 or view it online at issuesetc.org. Place an order for $79 or more, and CPH will send you 3 Christmas ornaments for free. Concordia Publishing House's Christmas catalog, issuesetc.org or 1-800-325-3040.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. Issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Advent season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Advent season. LutheranPublicRadio.org.